Thank you, Tim. Much appreciated. And I think the priority here also was to field some questions in the last hour of the show for the public folks. And we're going to take some calls online. But we also did some survey questions that we sent out to folks, and we were able to get a pretty broad spectrum of questions from the public. So I'm going to hand over the mic here to Kate Conley, who is the clerk for the borough, and she's got some of the questions on hand that were asked, and she's going to be directing those toward the folks online here today. So thank you, Kate.
Okay. Hi, I'm Kate Conley, the borough clerk. We requested people to submit questions. So I'm just going to start in. This one sounds like it's going toward the public health side. It's a question is from Janice Chuckwalk in Leadlock. And there were several people that asked about medevacs. So her question is, someone who works in the cannery or fishery needs to be medevaced to Anchorage because of COVID-19. Who will authorize the medevac? And will the fishing industry have to go through our little regional hospital? How many medevac planes and personnel are available? And how many hours can a medevac legally fly in a day or a week? Does somebody from the health community want to take that one?
Yeah, so this is Heidi Hedberg, and I can start, and then I'll turn it over to Mary. And then maybe some of the processing plants want to chime in. So if somebody needs to be medevaced, that's going to be a coordinated call. You know, it's great to include the clinic, which is Mary Swain. And the first call is going to be for private medevac. Once those resources have been exhausted, that's when the request would come into the State Emergency Operations Center, and that's when we would work with our National Guard and or the Coast Guard in order to move those patients. It depends on the question about how long can a pilot fly. It's different for each of those aircrafts. I'm not a pilot, so I'm not able to answer that question. But the planning that has gone into medevacs has been really extensive. So, and it's incredibly robust because living in Alaska, we know that's the main transport for individuals that need that medical support on an aircraft. So again, the canneries would be coordinating with the clinic, that call using private medevac resources, and then following up, once those resources are exhausted, National Guard has a lot of assets in addition to the Coast Guard, and they are prepared and ready to transport positive COVID cases. Mary, did you want to chime in at all?
I would. And Janice, I appreciate this question. So if somebody is called, because you are from Leavock, if somebody in your community were to request a medevac or anybody outside of the NACNIC area that is in the Lake and Penn region south, so the south part of the Lake and Penn region, you would go through your health aid clinic and they would go through the hospital. So yes, you would go through that. It is actually Kanakanak's call as to whether or not they are going to have you go to Dillingham or to Anchorage. So that will be up to them. Our call here, depending on who we're seeing, if there's availability in Dillingham, we'll have that conversation with Dillingham. If there's availability in Anchorage, we'll have that conversation with the patient. It really is a case-by-case basis, and it really is dependent on what services they need and why a medevac is being called. If you're up in the Upper Peninsula, then that would go through South Central Foundation through their health clinics up there. So it could be any of those. And honestly, it will be, just because it's COVID, it's going to be handled just like we have handled medevacs for any other reason. So I hope that answers your question, Janice. And if not, please call me.
Thank you, Heidi and Mary. You know, it's good to know that the Coast Guard, National Guard are going to be involved. I think that's something that a lot of people have asked about. Let's go to the next question. Marion Burgraff from King Salmon he pretty much nailed it. Who and how will the quarantine requirements be enforced? Not everybody follows the rules. Maybe local government can address that. Maybe Alice? Mayor Ruby or Mayor O'Hara, maybe one of you could address enforcement?
Sure, I'll answer it from Dillingham's perspective. So, we're doing enforcement as much as we can, and it's through local police or other contacts. So there's a lot of voluntary compliance involved, of course, but residents can, contact the number that we've provided and the email address, and we'll make an inquiry. We'll ask someone, and in a lot of cases, it's someone not understanding what they're supposed to be doing, but we're doing the best that we can. Some of the governor's mandates set, the quarantine period, and so that's part of what Mayor O'Hara was talking about, that we're looking for state assistance because once our population jumps up, it is going to be very difficult for us to be, enforcing some of that, and it will probably depend on, individuals reporting to us when they know that maybe there's a quarantine not being adhered to, and that's the part we're still working on, at least here in Dillingham.
Yeah, this Nathan, this is or Bergeroff, this is Mayor Dan O'Hara, and I really appreciate the conference call yesterday. Bryce Edgman, Speaker of the House, set up an opportunity for the governor's office to interact with the mayors, and Ben Stevens, who heads up the governor's task force, gave us some information that I really, really appreciate yesterday, and that would be they would send the security team into our three communities if we requested, and we're going to be requesting that right after the meeting today, both Nathan and Mayor of Dillingham, Ellis. To get that team in here for some additional help. Now, I think the problem area, and this is really a good question, we do not have enough help in a Bristol Bay borough. Of the 1,800 RIP permits, you're going to have 1,200 to 1,400 permits coming in, and about 85% of them are ending up in Naknek, South Naknek, and King Salmon. And the processors have their plan in place, which is very good. But the fishermen are kind of open-ended right now, and this is where we're going to have more security along with the borough and with the state of Alaska. And to maintain, if you come in and you're quarantined, then you really have to follow that quarantine because there's a reason for that. And I really appreciate the fact that it looked like we're going to get some additional. For example, we could send one person to South Naknek. It doesn't have to be a cop. It used to be a borough with the bar authority from our police department to just handle things. We're not arresting people. Just separation and directing people, I think, would be very good. And thank you for that question.
Hey, thank you, Dan. This is Nathan Hill. I also wanted to add that we are taking call-ins in the last hour of the show here. Also, we're being rebroadcast on KMXT.org if people want to pick this up on streaming. So, Sam, just was going to ask if you've had any calls coming in.
No calls at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Kate, I know we've got some other questions that came in over the email. Be interested to hear more about what the other concerns are in the region here.
Sure. Let's go to, so this is a Naknek resident. Many of the processors' plans say that the fleet will be allowed to prepare for fishing in their facilities prior to the processors arriving. But once they arrive, they are to stay on the water and not come to land or processing plants. It's unrealistic to think that 32-foot vessels can come to a dock for showers, food, and resupply, water, ice, and mechanical repairs. Is it not a good idea for the fleet to go through the plants for access, but a dedicated point to access the shore or land has to be available to the fleet with a protocol to remove all the crew if they are sick? Can the processors provide a site for showering and resupply for the fleet? So I think that was a pretty long question, but essentially I think maybe one of the processors, maybe Julianne or Shannon or Abby can address that. What is your plan for getting for the basic needs of the fleet?
Yeah, this is Shannon. I can answer that on behalf of the companies that are on the phone right now. So, you know, as I think we all reiterated during our opening presentations, that the top priority is really the health and safety of our employees, our fishermen, and the community. And so our protocols are reflective of that, and that's why you see some of the limitations on fishermen being allowed access to the property. But we do have measures in place to make sure that fishermen can get resupply for food and the parts, and that's why we have those designated runners and are working in coordination on that end. But at this time, we are limiting access to our facilities because it is a health and safety issue. But if the borough and the fleet feel that a different solution is needed, this came up earlier in the week on a call, I think we'd be willing to work together to identify a solution. But it would have to be one that makes that we can ensure that the health and safety of employees and the community are still at the top of the priority.
Thank you. That was Shannon Carroll with Trident. I just wanted to reiterate that the number for KDLG is 907-842-1670, or the 800 number is 800-478-5354. Next is a call from Dillingham. Dan Dunaway, I apologize, asks, how is it that this spring bottom fishery in the Bering Sea and Aleutians has been prosecuted since January without a single virus problem? They have about 10,000 or more people living, working, and fishing in the associated communities. Restrictions are at the state level with minimal additional restrictions by local communities. Why, then, are some people so convinced it will be vastly different in Bristol Bay this summer? Well, I'm not exactly sure who wants to field that one. Maybe one.
This is Commissioner Crum.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that question. That has been something that we've been working on as well. You know, knowing that this has been going on for a long time with a large influx of people, well before we even had Mandate 10, the interstate travel mandatory quarantine in place, working with folks in Unalaska and Akutan, with all of these individuals coming in, working in that area, they've done a tremendous job responding to it on a local level. There have been a couple instances where vessels have called in advance and reported to the Coast Guard, said, hey, we've got somebody who's symptomatic. Boat was held offshore. They found a way to do remote testing, and then those samples were flown into the state lab for verification while the boat was held offshore, anticipating, probable quarantine for the crew. And then once it came back negative, then the boat was allowed in. So I find that, and I hope everybody else, finds that heartening, the fact that we've had some of these instances going on with influxes of people and still finding a way to do this safely. As we all know, in particular, in Unalaska has its own travel issues, in particular with the runway. So making sure that, a community like that can be safe with so many workers has been a tremendous aspect. And then as far as the rest, I don't know if the processors want to respond.
This is Nicole Kimball from PSPA in Anchorage. If you want processors to respond, I could take that.
Yes, please. Go ahead, Nicole.
Just to add on, that it's true, in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands, those groundfish fisheries have been ongoing since the end of, mid to late January. And so all of those processors have learned a lot in that period. We clearly didn't have kind of COVID hitting Alaska at that point, and workers were already in the community at that time. So they're going to be, they've submitted plans. I just wanted to make that clear. Response plans, community and workforce protection plans to the state and to Unalaska as required as they ramp up for the next season. But part of it was, good timing in terms of having those groundfish fisheries starting before we really had a hard hit in Alaska. And then second was just using that kind of slow ramp up to be able to understand what our lessons learned are as we move into a bigger season. They also have a pretty significant resident workforce there, and that's helpful as well. Thanks.
Hello, this is Todd Larson. Could I comment on this as well?
Tom, go ahead and introduce yourself. I don't think we've spoke with you yet.
Yeah, this is Todd Larson. I'm a city manager of Dillingham. I just wanted to add in a few things here just for consideration in this. and how it applies to us. The first reported case in the United States wasn't until February 27th. And then since then, there's been a million cases that have been reported with 57,000 deaths. And Alaska's first case wasn't reported until March 12th. And right now we have zero cases in Bristol Bay. So when you start talking about statistics like that, a lot of those fisheries began and or occurred when there was no coronavirus even in the United States at the time. And which, with the isolation of some of those and us as well, it would certainly keep that out of there. You know, you can't fly there, you can't bring it there. So that's part of it. But really, we want to, when you look at these, when we talk about flattening the curve and the curves like that, if you look at the data, you got to be suspect to the curve. Yeah, we've learned a lot from lower 48 and from the world's application, but we need to really analyze the data because I think our wave hasn't really hit here yet. Not trying to be alarmist or anything by any means, but that's part of that reason that there wasn't any cases out there.
Awesome.
I appreciate that. This is Commissioner Crum. Just real quick clarification. The first case in the U.S. was January 20th in Snohomish, Washington. And Washington was the first hospital.
Yeah, I just pulled the 27th of February off the CDC website.
Yeah, January 20th was the first one that was reported. So that was where that came from. So, you know, that's where, yes, we have to protect these communities. But, you know, a lot of travel back and forth, even from the end of January on going into Alaska. So there's a chance of mixing and spread. So it's nice that we've been able to build up a response and learn since then.
Thank you, Commissioner Crum and Nicole and Todd Larson. Thank you. I think that we have a caller online.
Yeah, this is Sam with KDLG. We have a caller online. Thomas Gardner from Dillingham. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Thomas Gardner. I just have a quick question. Have you guys looking at any way of digitally transmitting fish tickets or documents from the tenders without signatures to minimize the exposures?
So if I could, I'll just repeat your question, Thomas, just make sure I heard it. You were asking about minimizing the exposure with fish tickets, if there's a plan to minimize exposure with fish tickets. Is that correct?
Correct, because we're on deliveries or fuel transfers. We have to get papers, sign them, pass them back and forth between the tenders and the captain and the crew.
Right. I wonder if Tim Sands maybe could speak to that. Tim, is there any plans?
Yeah, we are talking about it. We haven't come up with a solution yet, and we're going to be relying heavily on the processors themselves to figure out what's going to work for them and under their protocols. But, you know, right now we don't have a final answer on that. We're still working on it.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any more online people, Sam?
No more calls at this time. The numbers are out there, 842-1670, 1-800-478-5354. And you can also try 842-5281 for everyone local here in Dillingham.
Well, while we're waiting, let's go to another question from our pre-submitted questions. This is from a NACNIC resident. Are the seafood processors each bringing staff medical personnel, such as a doctor, a nurse, or EMT, to reside at their plant for the seasons during summer operations? So I think that's a quick one to the processors.
So this is Julianne Curry at Icicle Seafoods, and I can take that one. Both Trident and Silver Bay, they answered this question already in their preamble when we first got started on this show, and we did as well. All of us are planning on bringing trained and licensed medical professionals to our facilities for the coming summer season, and they'll be there for the entire season. So that's really there to be able to help ease up some of the burden on the local healthcare community. But we also got confirmation on the NACNIC call the other day that the 10 major processors are all planning on following suit. So the majority of the processing sector in Bristol Bay this summer will be bringing their own medical professionals to their facility.
Thanks for reiterating that, Nicole. I appreciate it. Excuse me, that's Julianne.
we received multiple questions about testing, and so can maybe Mary or Heidi answer, will it be available before people arrive, and will it be available in the region, depending on who needs it and when they need it?
Yeah, this is Heidi, and I can start with the question and answer it, and then Mary can follow. So on the State of Alaska website, if you go to the Department of Health and Social Services, there's the little icon that says testing sites, and it is updated on a daily basis, and it lists all of the sites that have testing available. Public health nursing, all of the public health nursing centers are able to collect samples, and they send those samples to the state lab. So Indian Health Services received a bunch of Abbott machines, and they sent those out to the tribal health organizations. The Department of Health and Social Services received a bunch of Abbott machines, and we also sent that we coordinated with Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and we sent those Abbott machines out to a lot of the hospitals and federally qualified health centers and other clinics. In addition, as we are working with our federal partners, we are receiving additional testing equipment and supplies. And that is where, as we've been working with Mary Swain, we want to position one of those Cepheid machines that really have a high throughput for testing at her testing site in NACNAC. Mary, did you want to add on?
Yeah, so I was on another call. What are they calling it? The NACNAC King Salmon Infectious Disease Task Force. And so it has a lot of processors. It has the tribe entities, it has the borough, and it has a couple other the businesses that are in the borough talking. And one of the things that we found out in that call is that some of the processors are working with the University of Washington also to get testing down there. And I believe Dr. Zink also stated that they are working with the University of Washington so that if anybody is in the Seattle area outside of just Anchorage, that they can get tested down there. They're running into some supply issues, and Alaska's trying to help them with that. So hopefully all of that works. There's still going to be needed testing in region, and that, I think, is what's important to know, that all the little village clinics as well as our clinic all have testing capability. And the state has been very good about knowing that right now we may not need them, but we're going to need a ramp up here in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and they're prepared to help us with that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Commissioner Hedberg, or Director Hedberg. I think that we have a couple calls online, Sam.
We do. We have Bob. He's the general manager from the Katmai Lodge. He has a question. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, this question is for Nathan. Do you happen to find out or have any plans for the local lodge fisheries that are actually coming out in the clients that are going to be coming in, the king salmon? Is there going to be a protocol for quarantine, or is the plans for lifting the quarantine? But most of the lodges do start bringing their customers in right around July 1.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for the question. This is Nathan. And I actually don't have an answer for that question right now. The last I had heard, state was still working on some mandates, so perhaps somebody higher on the food chain here can answer that question. But I know that is in the works, so perhaps I can push this question over to a state authority.
Okay.
All right, we have another call. This is Karen Villeneuve in Dillingham. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, good morning. So my concern is, and I'm sorry, I kind of like just got on, so I don't know what was talked about before, but, you know, the Coast Guard does have requirements, and I was just wondering if we could potentially require that outside fishermen, or fishermen in general, I shouldn't just say outside, be required to have with them a kit that's a little over $400, but it would include like a tent, a sleeping bag, a mat, potential backpack for each person on board, because, you know, that is also personal safety equipment. And so I'm not sure how any of that would work, but that is something that I would definitely recommend, if we could also start, you know, sectioning off areas where, because I know that canneries have, you know, their system in place where, but if we can set up areas for fishermen to have their own infirmary, where we could potentially have nurses or doctors go and do site visits, because as we all know, our resources here for the residents is very limited. And so I just want to see if we can't keep some of that away so that we can continue using our limited resources for those who are residents of the region. Thank you.
Fritz at BBRSDA, I know that you, the BBRSDA has worked really hard on planning for the fishermen. Maybe you could address that.
I had a bit of trouble understanding the question. Could someone repeat it, please? This had to do with providing PPE for the fleet.
I think that she was saying that perhaps it would be good if each individual fisherman had their own, were prepared to quarantine themselves, I think, on land with a tent and such. I think that's what she was saying.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we are exploring the, you know, the trying to secure personal protective equipment for the fleet. That's kind of a continuing process. And in as much as there's difficulty getting some of that equipment, in terms of quarantining locally, I can speak to what the Peter Pan Boatyard in Dillingham is doing, and there are plans to restrict access, you know, to once a non-resident fisherman arrives in Dillingham, they'll be expected to, you know, repair to the PAF yard. My understanding is that, with Peter Pan's assistance, there's going to be enforcement and no circulation within the community if people are quarantining on their boat. The idea is to, limit their time at the PAF yard and launch as quickly as possible. Peter Pan is encouraging fishermen that have, like, major projects to do on their boats that aren't absolutely necessary, that they not undertake those this year. As far as, I would love to see that recommendation, because it's certainly something that the RSDA could add to its list of things that we should communicate to the fleet. But if the person who called with that question could get a hold of me and refine that a little bit, I would very much, share that with the RSDA's team.
All right. Sounds like there's even more calls online, Sam.
Okay, we have Laura Zimmon. I hope I'm saying that name right. Laura Zimmon from NACNIC. Go ahead, you're on. Hold on.
Couple questions. I have heard a lot from the processors about their plans and the their plans that are on file. One area I have a concern of is if anyone is collecting the plans from the private boat yards. We have a very large portion of the fleet that is stored in private boat yards, and I'm just curious if there is someone reviewing their individual plans to make sure that they're satisfactory. The other question I had was regards to the SetNet fleet. I know at one time there was mention of some specific mandates coming out for skiffs, and I'm just trying to get some updates on where that information is.
That sounds like that's a really good question. I have been wondering about the set netters. Maybe, Fritz, could you, is BBRSD come out with some rules for set netters?
I understand that the state is working on that. We are extending, assistance that we're able to provide to the set net fleet, including, the quarantine flags in trying to bring the SetNet fleet under that umbrella, but it might be more accurate if Commissioner Crum could address that specifically with regard to the SetNet fleet.
So from our understanding, the SetNet fleet is a later start, and that's something that we're going through the process of working, trying to develop with input from them and the communities. Yeah, we were trying to get some of the bigger items out the door first, and SetNets will be addressed.
And then the other part of Laura's question was about private boat yards. I'm not sure who would be best to address that.
This is Shannon from Trident, and I can't speak for all the boat yards, and I would only just speak with respect to me having some communication with LFS, which owns some boat yards in the Naknek area, but I know that they are planning on submitting their boat yard plan to the state prior to the season getting going. So that plan would go through the same process that all the community and workforce protection plans went through.
Madam Chair, this is the Mayor of the Bristol Bay Borough. Could I address that question?
Yeah, please go ahead, Dan.
Yes, okay. This is a good question from Laura Zimmon and Richard Wilson here in Naknek, and he asked the question: What protocol does the private boat storage areas have should a violation take place of, say, breaking your quarantine? We realize that when you get off the flight and you're where you go, if you're from out of state and wherever you make your berth at that time where you can be there for 14 days, it's a good question. Now, we saw 10 plans coming in from the processors. It looked like their first one, the AGS, came in and locked themselves in and did it according to their plan. That's wonderful. That works. As I said earlier, the fishermen are a little more open-ended. I'm glad Vic is on board today to BBRSA that help with this question. But if the violation takes place in the yard, that's where the Bristol Bay Borough Police comes in. And I'd like to hear Commissioner Crum maybe address what the state troopers would do, because this is a very serious violation of breaking that quarantine. Thank you.
This is Commissioner Crum. As we said before, bringing in the assessment and working with the local groups and leadership said they'll be getting us some of the assessment plans, their areas of concern. And we are going to work to have security resources on the ground to cover that. I guess I'm not quite understanding the question. Under Mandate 17, if it's a commercial fishing vessel that is entered into the fleet, they have to abide by and complete these forms and turn them in regardless of where they dock at.
Thank you. I think that answers the question well. Thank you very much. Sam, you want to go to the next caller?
Okay, yeah, we have another call. This is Russell Phelps calling in from Naknek. Go ahead, Russell.
Hi, thank you for taking these questions. I'm a borough assembly member and also a Bristol Bay drift fisherman, and my question is to the processors. We know that most of the fishermen are they abide by the law, but there's approximately, I'd say, 10% that are maverick fishermen, unruly, and don't really listen to the mandates or the rules set by the processors. So my question to the processors is, what would you do if you had a fisherman that wasn't listening to the mandates or your rules set by your company? Would you remove them from fishing, from delivering fish to your processor? And how would you address these fishermen that are basically, in my opinion, aren't going to listen and abide by the law?
Does one of the processors want to address that, or maybe Nicole?
Hi, this is Abby with Silver Bay Seafoods. I just I'd point to the state mandate 17 for fishing vessels. The state is clearly taking this very seriously, and they've included penalty and enforcement language in the mandate. And as I mentioned before, we've been meeting with all of our fishermen and communicating the details of that mandate and really stressing the significance of community protections and as well as our workforce protections, and pointing out very clearly some of the penalties that they face under that mandate. I had also mentioned that one of the requirements of that mandate is that they are required to read, review, and commit to the mandate, and we're not, as processors, allowed to buy fish until they've provided us their authorization form committing to that state mandate. So we believe that those are really strong enforcement measures built into the state mandate, and we really appreciate and support that guidance from the state.
And this is Nicole. I agree with everything that Abby just said, and I think that affidavit as a compliance mechanism that's required to be provided to processors before delivery, that's really important. But I also think, you know, what Mayor O'Hara has mentioned, what Mayor Ruby has mentioned in terms of a commitment to have some level of security or monitoring on the pieces of the catcher vessel mandate that we know that, you know, some people might not understand, might not have an easy time, you know, ensuring that they're staying within their quarantine, having some level of security or, you know, private company to be able to monitor quarantine locations, make sure people aren't walking up and down the harbor, make sure they're not entering the processing plant, and certainly not entering and engaging in the community unless it's for a medical necessity. That level of kind of coordination with the state and the communities on that level of security, I think, is really critical. I think the things we've heard on this call are going to be really important to ensuring that 10% that you mentioned isn't becoming a problem. I think it's a great question.
Nathan, this is Mayor O'Hara.
Yes, Dan.
Yes, I don't think we quite answered that question. And there's a couple of things we should keep in mind. For instance, the fishermen have a fishing permit, and that's owned by the fishermen, so they own the resource. And if they have a contract with the processors, I suppose that could be addressed. But I think that we should keep in mind that the state of Alaska, I'm sure, should get involved in something like this because, you know, if you fish out of bounds and get too many out-of-bound fishery restrictions on you, your permit is taken away. And so I think if fishermen violate the rules with their processor, that should be reported to the state of Alaska. And then we should take into consideration that, you know, this gets violated, and I think you'd lose your market. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor O'Hara. I think that's an excellent suggestion. And, you know, as we move forward with this fluid conversation and the pandemic in front of us, we need to be, of course, prepared to answer these questions. And so everything isn't figured out just yet, but we're working diligently to try to come up with these answers. So thank you for that. And Sam, Kate, is there other questions rolling in?
Yeah, we have... Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. We have our lines are lighting up over here. We have a lot on hold.
Let's take the next one, Sam.
Okay. This call is coming from Dillingham, Alaska. Diane Folsom. Diane, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for having this very important call and show. My question is addressed to Commissioner Crum, having to do with Mandate 17. Mandate 17 appears to be for blanket-wide for all fisheries groups, Southeast, Aleutian Chain, for all fishing fleets, when every one of those fisheries are different and unique. Much of the information in the mandate has to do with crew quarters, private crew quarters and private bathrooms for quarantining crew in case of, well, first of all, for quarantining, and then if your crew becomes ill. The Bristol Bay Fleet does not have any of those, any of those luxuries, per se. And so I'm wondering why the mandate was written as a blanket for all fishing fleets, and why wasn't one written for specifically Bristol Bay? And then the addition to that question is, how are our fishing fleet supposed to handle quarantining in close quarters with others and, you know, no facilities to keep clean, bathroom facilities, places to wash up, that kind of thing. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for that question. The mandate's written statewide because we have commercial fishing that is going on statewide. So we had to get information together for the independent fishing vessels that are not a part of the fleets that didn't sign on to the some of the processor plans. And so we had to take care of what was going on right now. If they're the specific Bristol Bay concerns like you just brought up, we've offered and we're working with the mayors to put together if there's specific Bristol Bay addendums that we need to look at, we are willing to do so. So thank you.
Okay, you guys ready for some more questions?
Yeah, thank you, Sam.
Okay, we actually had a caller that didn't want to go out over the air. This is a community member from Southeast Alaska. Their question, when several hundred fishermen show up and they're living on their boats in Naknek and Dillingham, what's being done to make sure they are adhering to the mandate, and how are the boat yards preparing for that influx from places like the West Coast?
Wait, Sam, I had trouble hearing you. This is Nathan, and I apologize.
No problem. I'll reread the question. It's a community member from Southeast Alaska. They didn't want to go out over the air. They wanted us to read the question, which is no problem. When several hundred fishermen show up and they're living on their boats in Naknek and Dillingham, what's being done to make sure that they are adhering to the mandates, and how are the boat yards preparing for that influx from places like the West Coast?
This is Commissioner Crum. I'll take it again. A lot of these questions are along the exact same vein of enforcement, and we'll be bringing in security resources to take care of that. That'll be a state thing to help that, to relieve some of the burden from the boroughs and the municipalities, and that's how we're going to help. As far as the boat yards, that's another issue.
Okay, we're going to go ahead. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'm out.
Okay, we got another call. This is Dan Dunaway calling from Dillingham. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, thank you. There was a call from a lodge earlier regarding what the guides, lodges, and sport fishing activities are supposed to follow. About a month ago, the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association rounded up about 20 people statewide, and I was part of that. A lodge owner in King Salmon was also part of it. And on the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association website, they have some virus response web pages that show all the different guidelines and template plans that lodges, sport operators, charter operators can use to develop a plan and submit to the state. Mr. Crum sat in on some of that. The Commissioner of Fish and Game sat in on it, and it's been approved. So for lodge operators, even air taxis, you might want to take a look. Go to Kenai River Sport Fishing Association website and find all the information. It's a big website, and a lot was done on there. So I just wanted to get that word out. There was a lot. There was like 3 weeks of teleconferences to create that. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Hey, this is Nathan. I just wanted to chime in a little bit here and say that as things progress, we're you know, keeping up with the mandates, and I've got myself at least staff that is trying to keep 100% on top of what the most current developments are. And I think this is the beginning of a
cohesive conversation. A lot of conversations have occurred up to this point. You know, from the very first onset of COVID-19, we had village conversations and across the communities with tribes and cities that got iterated and reiterated. Now we're kind of doing that at a regional state level. And so the more we can get together like this and speak cohesively on the topic, I think the better. And just to keep folks educated and up to date on what's going on, I would suggest that we plan to do this again at some point in the near future. So that's my two cents. We don't have all the answers right now. We will continue to work on getting answers. And if there are things that have gone unanswered, I just wanted to let you know I'm available. You can find me on the website for Lake and Peninsula Borough, and definitely give me a holler if you have questions. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take another call. This is Mike Cicero. I hope I'm saying that correctly, from Kodiak. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, this is Mike Cicero, Kodiak fisherman, 40 years in the Bay. I'm the former board chair for 3 years of the BBRSJ, and I really appreciate the BBRSJ's efforts and everybody involved, especially at the governor, policy advisors, and everybody, all the commissioners and the heads of agencies and the processors. I've been involved in some of the work groups pushing the ideas ahead. And one of the things that I keep coming back to, you know, is I'm a member of the fleet, and I think it's really important for the Bristol Bay fishermen to adopt it. Independent strategy for fishing Bristol Bay this year that would include fixing your bathroom and your showers. If you don't have a shower, buy two solar showers. And you know, there's the guys use them in the military all the time when they can't get to showers. They just the little 5 gallon solar bags, and you know, be ready to take care of yourself on your boat, because the notion of access to the cannery and going up the ladder to take a shower is just an indication that somebody has no real perspective on what this year is going to be like. And I think that there's many fishermen that I'm going to use the term coddled by their processors, and some of these folks are going to need to have a different business plan for this year. They're going to have a real struggle on their hands. And I think for myself, I'm planning on voyaging from Kodiak and never touching the beach for the entire season, much less a ladder or going to shore. And I know not everybody can do that. Unfortunate in that regard, but I think that reverse engineer backwards from never needing to go to a cannery dock and getting everything from your tender, and it comes down to how you pack your groceries, you know, for example, and how you manage your laundry. And for example, some guys put all their groceries in a giant crate and they need to get on and off the net barge every opener to resupply, and it would be much better to incrementally package your groceries and, for example, use a garbage bag liner in a cardboard box or a plastic tote. And when you receive that tote on board, just pull the plastic bag out, give the tote back, and you'd be somewhat sanitary already. And just incrementally supply your boat with a organized stream of resources from your processor that you've shipped in advance to them. And forego the notion that you're going to be going on the shore or on other vessels to support your fishery and your efforts and your crew. That way, if people have a real problem, like breaking down or an illness on board, there will be resources available, and we won't overburden and violate the protocols for unneeded and unnecessary minutia of people that are poorly organized. And that's just my comments to the fleet for this year. Thank you very much.
Nathan?
Hey, Sam, thank you. And I just wanted to, we've got 10 minutes left in the broadcast here, and it sounds like there's a lot of other questions that are rolling in. And I wanted to broach the subject of doing this again here in the next couple of weeks, where we can entertain more questions from the public and perhaps keep the state and the processes involved in a local, regional conversation. So, thank you, KDLG, and yourself for hosting this, and just wanted to iterate that I hope that there is another chance for the opportunity to have this discussion again, because as we all know, this is a fast-moving subject, and we're doing the best we can to track, and if we can provide some level of comfort or education to folks as far as what we're doing, and to maybe relieve some of the anxiety that's out there, then that's kind of our goal here too, is to make sure that folks are knowing that we're all putting a lot of work into the health and the assurance that the communities are going to be okay through the process. So thank you, Sam.
Yeah, no problem. We'll, whenever we can set this up again, we do have some more questions coming in. I'm going to let Tyler take this one.
Yes, this call is from a Naknek resident. Has there been research in each Bristol Bay community for the number of ambulances, and what is the number of paid emergency responders, not counting volunteers? Is the number of staffing and ambulances adequate? If not, what is the alternative plan?
My guess is that would be a question for Mary, but maybe there is not a definite answer on that. So, Mary, are you available?
I am. Thank you, Nathan. So that's a great question. EMS is ran by the borough in Bristol Bay Borough. I don't know what's happened. I can only speak on the Naknek side. Unfortunately, Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation isn't on the call to answer for the Dillingham side. But I do know that they have two, potentially three ambulances here. There's been talk about having a dirty ambulance, so one that transports all respiratory, COVID, that kind of thing, and then a clean ambulance that would do all of the injuries, that kind of thing. I'm not sure where exactly they are in their planning, but we are meeting with them at the end of the week once our other summer providers come in, and we're going to be doing a full response with them. So we'll be going over all of those protocols, everything that we need to know so that we can prepare whatever help that Chemai Clinic can be to the EMS in King Salmon and Naknek. But I know that they have at least one paramedic that'll be here very soon. They potentially have three more coming. From last I heard, those numbers may not be accurate. Unfortunately, I don't have those, but I will make sure that I have that information for the next call.
Thank you, Mary. This is Nathan. And Sam, do we have other calls coming in?
Yeah, we have two more calls. That's about about how much time we have left. So we're going to go ahead and go to Patty in Igigik. Go ahead, Patty. What's your question?
Hi, I'm from Igigik, and we do not have a regular health care person here, nor any enforcement here. So that's one big concern of mine. What's the plan to help Igigik with adequate health care and enforcement of these mandates?
This is Mary. I was in talk with Bristol Area Health Corporation about what the plan was for AEGIC, and last I heard they are working on it and that they potentially will be having a PA in AEGIC with a testing machine. I don't know if that is 100% set in stone, but I know that that was the conversation.
Also, this is Nathan, and I wanted to add that we've been in multiple conversations with Icicle Seafoods in Igigik, and they've got some pretty comprehensive planning going on, and perhaps they could speak to that a little bit, at least for their fleet.
Yeah, we definitely can. This is Julianne Curry at Icicle Seafoods, and that is a great question. Thank you so much for calling and asking that one. We view Igigik as our home. We really love being able to operate out of the community of Igigik. And what we've planned to do this summer is bring in our own nurse practitioner. So we will have a licensed nurse practitioner on site to be able to take care of any of the needs that arise with our processing workforce. And then it's also our understanding that the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation is going to be bringing in a medical professional to be able to staff the local clinic for a pretty good chunk of the summer as well. So we're really looking forward to continuing to have those conversations with the local Igigik community. I think we have another call with them tomorrow, if my calendar is accurate. So we're going to keep working on that. We're going to work as hard as we can to make sure that you guys are protected in that community.
Thank you. And Sam, I guess there's one other question here. We've got about 5 minutes left in the 2 hour span that you've committed to the broadcast here. So looking for that last question.
Yeah, this is about enough time for one more question. This is John. He's calling in from Dillingham. Go ahead, John.
Hi, this is John Corbett. I have two questions, actually. One is very specific to Icicle Seafoods. How do you plan on limiting the movement of the workers that you house in the Chugoyong property off campus here in Dillingham? And the next question is, is the city of Dillingham planning on limiting public access to the small boat harbor in order to limit interaction between the resident community and the fishing community? Thank you.
Hi. I'm sorry. This is Julianne Curry at Icicle Seafoods. I didn't quite catch your name, and your question was a little bit scratchy. Can you repeat that?
He hung up. His name's John. He's here in Dillingham, and I believe he was asking what you're going to do with the off-campus living quarters for your staff that comes in there, and what the city is going to do. They're going to limit access to the small boat harbor here in Dillingham.
Okay, so two separate questions in there. I can take the first one. We've been working really closely with the city of Dillingham to make sure that they're aware of what our plans are and that we've got some buy-in from our plans. I mean, we're planning on operating as a closed campus, as the rest of the processors on this call are, and the 10 other majors are. So we're planning on enforcing those rules for our processing workers. If you violate those rules, if you go off campus, then you are terminated and we remove you from the community. So that's how we're planning on handling that. Like the other major processors, we've also got additional security details and protocols in place. So we're really working overtime to make sure that our processing workforce stays on campus. But we just want to reiterate that our employees are taking this issue very seriously, as are our fishermen. So we're really hoping for a smooth summer in that regard. But we are in constant communication with the community in ways that we can improve our plans to ensure that happens.
This is Nathan Hill, and I just wanted to put my thank you out there to folks that are online here today and putting effort into communicating all of this with the public. And, of course, thanks to Sam and KDLG for hosting this. Hopefully we'll be able to continue the conversation and have another forum here within the next couple of weeks to help to move information and communicate more. So from myself and my staff, thank you all. And to Sam at KDLG and his staff, everything is much appreciated. And we'll all be in touch soon. Thank you.
All right. Like you said, Nathan, next couple of weeks, be looking for us to be doing this kind of thing again and us airing it. We have the bugs worked out, so we'll be able to take more calls, and I think it'll be a little bit more call heavy. We're going to go back to regular programming now.